Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Well, nearly everywhere you look, our culture is offering us sexual images, billboards, TV, magazines, radio advertisements. There's even pornography companies selling children's merchandise these days. You know, it used to be that kids used to pass notes in class up the back and gill, and now they're sexting, as you heard earlier this year in March, where New South Wales had to bring in some special pamphlets to go around schools and to families to warn of the dangers of young girls sending explicit images of themselves via text message. Where is it all coming from, and what is it doing to our young girls in particular? We've talked about this before with Melinda Tankard-Rees, but as I've said tonight, we really need to revisit this issue many, many a time. She's been saying for a while, enough is enough. She's just edited a new book called Getting Real, Challenging the Sexualization of Girls. It brings together a variety of authors on this issue from a variety of different spectrums as well. Melinda, good to have you on the show again.
Thanks for having me back, Sheridan.
Some people wouldn't have caught up with the conversations that we've had in the past about the sexualization of girls. So let's just recap on some of those things, some of the ways that adult sexual concepts are seeping into the world of children. Just give us some examples again.
Yeah, look, there's so many examples of the way we're seeing the enmeshing of sex industry messages and practices throughout the culture. You mentioned TV shows, you mentioned billboards, magazines even aimed at young girls now are teaching them highly sexualized behaviors. We're seeing pornographic messaging on children's T-shirts, on children's underwear, the music video clips also encourage girls to think that their value lies in being thin, hot, and sexy. So in so many ways, children are growing up in the shadow cast by pornography, and girls especially are learning to present this hyper-sexualized and prostitute-like version of themselves to the world.
So this raunch culture, as it's come to be known, do you have any idea as to why it might have arisen? I mean, you know, it's been with us forever, but it's so much more blatant and overt now. Any idea why?
Yeah, look, I have a few thoughts on that. Certainly women have always been objectified. Women's bodies have always been used to sell products. What we're seeing now, though, is those sexualized messages are being applied to younger and younger girls. So girls' bodies are being repackaged as sexually interesting, sexually available. Little girls are being photographed in the same way as adult models were. And I think a lot of it really has to do with the value systems of pornography, where once you would have to go to, you know, the back blocks of Canberra sex shops to pick up your porn. Now those pornographic messages have spread to every level of the culture. A lot of it, of course, has to do with the global industry that this is, the multi-million dollar industry, which is always looking for new markets and new ways to shift product. And again, that is now being applied to children who are being groomed for sexual consumption.
I mean, we mustn't lose sight of the fact that this is a multi-billion dollar industry, isn't it? The porn industry in general is multi-billion dollar. And so if you can open up a few markets,
yes,
or open up those markets early, then you're positioning yourself to win financially.
That's exactly right. We're seeing the proliferation and globalization of sexual imagery because it is just such a massive market. We know now that most boys, in fact, 70% of boys have seen porn by the age of 12. We know that 50% of girls 12 and under have seen porn, and by the age of 15 and 16, 100% of girls and boys have been exposed to these pornographic messages, and so they're getting distorted and delusional messages about sexuality, about relationships. Something that I've become extremely disturbed about in recent months is the rise of child-on-child sexual assault, even in the schoolyard.
Mm-hmm.
I've been talking to doctors and pediatricians and rape crisis workers, and what they're saying is that they are now seeing more and more children being affected by these explicit, coercive sexual displays, even at school. What they're seeing a rise on now is 12 and 13-year-old girls who are being anally assaulted by groups of boys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even they are shocked. I mean, sex crisis workers see a lot of horrible things, but even they are alarmed. And so we cannot underrate how serious this issue is. We're breaking down the taboos that once protected children to the point now where children are even adopting pornified roles and behaviours even in the schoolyard.
You've got to say, where do kids that young get that kind of idea from?
This is learned behaviour. Children are learning, again, at every level of society that this is the way you behave. They are considered valid participants now in a public culture of sex. They're expected to possess a sexual knowingness at younger and younger ages. And, you know, anyone that cares about children needs to be concerned about this issue.
This is Open House Across the Nation. Melinda Tankard-Reist is with us. We're talking about this issue of the sexualisation of children, in particular young girls. As you're already getting a bit of a hint, some of these issues that we're talking about are actually quite graphic. This isn't the time to have the young ones listening along with you. Theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast of this. If there's somebody that you know who needs to listen to this topic during the week as well. Melinda, let's touch on some of the other effects on the behaviour of young girls as a result of some of this overly sexualised material, whether it be billboards, magazines. And in the past, when we've spoken to you, you've had great concerns about teenage girls' magazines and, in fact, pre-teen girls' magazines like Barbie and those kinds of ones.
Yeah, well, a lot of these magazines are full of information and images which, again, encourage girls to think that they need to be publicly sexual, that their whole role in life is to possess sexual allure and to give out sexual attraction to attract male attention. Even in the very young girls' magazines, they have features on when you've got a crush on an older man and, you know, boy crushes, this sort of thing. Even 8 to 10-year-old readership can have that kind of content. And all the research shows that sexualizing girls is associated with some of the most common health problems suffered by girls. For example, a body dissatisfaction, eating disorders, low self-esteem, depression, anxiety, self-harm. I mean, self-harm is a massive issue in this problem. It is the highest cause of hospital admission for girls aged 13 to 19. It's been described as the new eating disorder. Girls are also subjected to coercive sex now at earlier and earlier ages. Again, recent research shows that the majority of first sexual experiences are unwanted and are coerced and often marked by drunkenness and force. And again, these behaviours have been connected with objectification and sexualisation of girls.
You know, there's some real double standards going on here, isn't there, Melinda? Because on the one hand, we're really happy to run out and trot out those phrases about, you know, we're against sexual harassment. And, you know, it's not right to put a picture of a naked woman up, you know, at work. But, you know, we've got billboard. I drove past a billboard on the way to this station tonight advertising a sex expo. And it was very, very explicit. There's a lot of double standards going on.
The double standards is very much realised in billboards. It is a crime. It is sexual harassment for a man to put up a pin-up in his workplace. But advertisers and marketers are allowed to pollute the public spaces that we all have to inhabit with sexualized images of women. Complete and utter double standard. You know, a lot of my critics say, well, you can turn off the TV. Well, you can't turn off the billboard. And it is about time these billboard advertisers were brought to account for encouraging women to be seen, encouraging it to, women to be seen as only there for sexual pleasure and for sexual arousal. Another issue that I've been taking up is with some colleagues in Kids Free to Be Kids and elsewhere is the issue of porn in the corner stores. We've been examining pornography in milk bars, 7-Elevens, petrol stations, a McDonald's fuel zone, and discovered that the bulk of it is illegal. It encourages sex with very little girls and rape and incest. And we sent some of these images to the heads of the corporations like BP, Mobil and Shell and said, do you think these images of little girls begging for sex from older men is consistent with your corporate branding? And they had to agree, well, no, it wasn't. And they pulled them out of those particular stores. But, you know, McDonald's still has those magazines in their co-branded fuel stores. So, you know, what's Ronald McDonald doing reading teen porn titles?
Yeah.
We've had a campaign on that as well. But these are just more examples of the way that porn is often at children's eye level, and again, contributing to a distorted and delusional myth about women and female sexuality. This is the wallpaper against which we're trying to raise healthy, happy, resilient children, and it is impossible for us to do that.
1-300-40-2020 is the number if you've got something to throw into this conversation. What have you seen? What have you experienced from your girls? Have you experienced something along these lines where you're seeing the effects of this actually shaping your girls? 1-300-40-2020 is my number. You've seen it, Melinda?
Yeah, look, I have. I try not to talk about my kids too much because I try to protect them a bit from what I do. But look, any mother that has daughters will see the effects of the pornification of culture on their own children, where their girls are very conscious of how they look. They're worried that they don't look hot enough. Just today I was given the example of a little girl, I think she was 4 or 5, pointing to a magazine and saying, "Mummy, will I ever look as good as that?" You know, and obviously she's looking at an airbrushed, sexualized image and thinking she needs to compete. She needs to look like that too, to be acceptable. So, you know, we're not immune at all from these cultural messages. They do affect our children, and it's, you know, a full-time, round-the-clock job to try to help our girls to discern the negative messages, to unpack them, and to aspire to something better and something higher. Mm. But, you know, I talk to a lot of girls in schools and at youth camps and retreats and various places, and the level of sexual assault is just absolutely mind-boggling. And I think a lot of parents actually aren't aware of what's happening to their girls at younger and younger ages. Mm. Girls being drugged, girls being made drunk, the whole sexting phenomenon. Children as young as 13 in this country are sending explicit photographs of themselves to boys. Huge problem. So parents really need to know what's going on and get familiar with what's happening.
Yeah, I want to get some pointers on how parents can actually counter this from you in just a few minutes' time. I also want to explore with you, since we last spoke, and we've spoken a number of times, have you seen any gains made in this whole area, Melinda? You talked about heading off to BP and Shell and at least some sort of small win there with some of these magazines being taken off the shelves. What gains have been made so far?
Well, look, I'm really happy to be able to report tonight that there is a new grassroots movement of people across the country that are saying enough is enough. And they are mobilising in just wonderful ways in grassroots activism and making changes. I'm hearing from women every day who say that they feel empowered now to speak out. They feel empowered to go into their video store and say, "Look, I don't want those porn titles beside the kids section or beside the top 10 where often the kids are congregating, or I'm not happy with the clothing that you are offering children in that particular store. I'm not going to shop here anymore." Complaining to shop owners again about the pornography at children's eye level. Every day I'm getting new examples, and I think that the advertisers and marketers and corporations are going to have to realise that they have to exercise some corporate social responsibility or we won't be supporting them.
Yeah.
I'm about to launch a new campaign called Crossed Off, which is crossing them off your Christmas list. If these companies are engaging in objectifying and sexualizing behaviours, then we're not going to shop there. And I'm hoping that that will help to kickstart a new movement of activism across the country where we just boycott these people because money is about the only thing that they do understand.
That's exactly right. Well, we'd definitely like to be kept up to date with that because I think that's a very, very important move. I'd like to take some calls as well. Brett has called in. Hi, Brett.
G'day.
Now, I've got up here on the screen a former abuser. Tell me about your story.
Well, basically, it started off when I was young, probably about 7 or 8, just seeing all the sexualized stuff that I saw on TV, like on Home and Away, Baywatch and all that.
Home and Away. So even something as, you know, like a 7:30 time slot film, a program, you actually were catching images in that.
Well, if you see it these days, they're even openly talking about teenage sex on shows like that, but we won't go there. So it started off with that. I started copying things like that with my little sister. Basically, it was so ingrained in me from that point because I was such a young child that it continued on into my teenage and even adult years where I'm still struggling with it now.
Mm. How young were you when you first saw pornographic images?
Well, straight out pornographic was probably more towards my early teens, but I could sometimes even just find on the side of the road just pornographic images that have just been thrown away, like as young as 10.
Mm. Certainly shapes the way anybody thinks, but in particular a guy, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, while we talk about the sexualization of girls, of course we cannot forget that this also affects the boys to the point where, as I said, I became an abuser myself.
Mm. So abuser in the terms of using porn, abusing in the terms of affecting anybody else?
No, I'm talking about actually abusing young girls, many young girls, I'm unfortunate to say.
Okay. And what processes have you gone through in the years that have followed that in terms of restitution, etc.? Have you gotten in contact with authorities?
Well, I've been in jail 3 times. I've actually just been released 2 weeks ago for breaching my parole.
Okay.
I've had to go through a long process of being under supervision, and I've basically gotten to the point where I'm now taking voluntarily some very powerful medication to basically reduce my sex drive and to stop this ever happening again. I'm even risking my fertility doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And the conditions that have been placed on me are phenomenal. They have the power to tell any potential employer my full criminal history, the fact I'm on a supervision order, and all the conditions of that order.
Mm-hmm.
But as well as that, I've had to face a lot of hard years of seeing the damage it's done to my family, of even just seeing the damage it's done to my relationship with God. And I'm only now just starting to really get back on track where I can say I'm actually moving forward.
Mm. Who's walking beside you with this journey, Brett? What kind of help are you getting spiritually, psychologically, etc.?
Well, I'm seeing counselling, of course, as part of my supervision. But mm-hmm. most importantly, I have a very understanding and very grateful church who have been very good to me. And you know, basically, I can confidently say, without God, I would either be still locked up or I'd be dead by now.
Mm. Okay. Well, Brett, thanks for sharing your story. I appreciate your call.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think it powerfully shows, Melinda, it powerfully shows just what can happen with these images getting into somebody's mind at such an early age. Brett was talking about seeing these images as young as 10.
It certainly does, and these images really encourage predatory sexual attitudes. I'm hearing from quite a few men and even teenage boys who are describing their addictions to pornography and the ways that compulsive use is reinforced again at every level of society. Now, I will never ever justify what Brett has done, and I'm glad that there are all sorts of strict oversights and accountability processes, because men that have done those things, that's the only option that society has. I mean, you know, to protect other girls,
right?
So I'm not going to excuse the choices that he has made. Having said that, the culture doesn't make it easy for men who may be tempted in a certain direction not to go all the way. You know, I've seen the documentary about you know, men that just start with sort of, I'd hate to use the word average pornography, but you know, the stuff that everyone's looking at.
Get what you mean, yeah.
You know, and then they end up in the illegal sites. They end up looking at, you know, child porn and torture and bondage sites and that sort of thing. And so there's often a continuum where a man, he no longer gets the same hit that he originally got, and needs to seek out more graphic material, and often ends up acting out on real live little girls, you know. So, yeah, I can't help but think about the girls in this situation, in this story that's just being told. And, you know, we need to think about them because so many girls are subjected to sexual assault. It is absolutely diabolical. But again, the culture is contributing to this toxicity and this sickness. And how do we raise good, strong boys when we know that the bulk of them have been exposed to pornography by the age of 15? So society has a lot to answer for. And I just fear for our young men, and I fear for our young women who will be trying to find good men in the future, because I'm just not sure how many will be left.
This is Open House across the nation. Melinda Tankard-Reese is with us. She's well known for having stood up against the forces in society that have been continually seeing this sexualisation of girls, and getting younger and younger and younger. She's just edited this book called Getting Real, Challenging the Sexualisation of Girls. 1-300-40-2020 is my number. Jason, you've got a question for Melinda?
Yeah, g'day. I'd like to ask Melinda, as a dad with three girls, all under 10, what can a dad do to really equip them pre-teen and get them ready for those teen years?
Melinda, that takes us nicely to this whole issue of what can parents do?
It certainly does. Look, you know, we need good dads more than ever. I think the best thing that the men can do is to love their wives and to model a good relationship for their girls to see, so that their girls hopefully will want that as well, that they won't aim for, you know, second best or third best, that they will see what a good, strong, healthy, loving relationship is. So I think that's the first thing. I think that another thing is to, again, just put all those protections in place in the family home. So having computers in the public space, not in the private bedrooms, having, you know, boundaries around TV, around music video clips, around magazines. Men also, I think, can praise the look. See, often we praise girls for how they look rather than saying, gee, you've got a great brain, or gee, you're a great artist, or gee, it's great the way you care about global poverty or want to make a difference in the world. And I'm not saying don't compliment your daughters. I'm not saying that. But I think sometimes we give that way more priority over other things we could be complimenting our daughters on. And so, again, they get a limited stereotypical perspective of what's important. Then I think also, you know, we need to demand more from our regulatory bodies and from our governments. Parents can only do so much. I agree with the saying, it takes a village to raise a child. So we need to demand more from our regulators and from our governments and from our corporations. It needs to be a very holistic approach. And if I could say something about what mums can do as well, a lot of the research shows that girls take their cues from their mothers. So if their mothers aren't happy with their bodies, if their mothers are complaining about food, if they're dieting, if they're standing on the weights on the scales all the time to measure their weight, little girls will be watching that very closely. It's interesting, a new phenomenon I'm noticing is that I'm getting girls coming up to me saying, can you give me some tips on how to help my mother, because my mother hates herself.
Is that
my
right?
My mother hates her body. Yeah, it's really quite disturbing and fascinating at the same time, because I think we've actually missed a generation with this message. We haven't really equipped the mothers of the daughters to recognise their true value and worth. So they've totally bought into this culture, and now that's affecting their daughters as well.
Let me just work in a few more calls here. Hi, Ben.
G'day there, Sharon. How are you
going? Yeah, well, thank you.
My wife, she works in childcare industry, and, you know, she's come on, told me stories about where a kindergarten boy and a year one boy held down a year one girl while one of them stuck their hand up the girl's skirt, you know, into a pant. And I don't know, where do you learn that at that age?
Exactly. That's exactly,
you know, I don't know what these kids are looking at, but certainly, like, she'll talk about, you know, how aware the kids are of sexual activity and sexual acts. And, you know, it's just, it blows your mind.
And yet we kind
of... It happened at school, by the way, and it happened in a school playground.
Yeah, and then we go and trot out the fact that, you know, well, pornography is fine for adults because they can choose to, you know, they can choose to use it and they can keep it. Nah, not, we've got this stuff in society, and actually it's affecting the most vulnerable.
Yeah, well, I don't think it, in terms of even affecting adults, I mean, I think it does affect people, you know. it sort of zooms up your sex drive, and you don't think properly. You don't, and I don't know. I just think it's a horrible thing what's happening at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm glad that someone's raising their voice. Really, I'm quite excited about what I'm hearing tonight because it's so blatant in our society. I'm glad to hear people are standing up for it, and there are movements. They're dealing with it and raising the issue. So.
Well, Melinda's been doing that for a long time. Thanks for your call. Really appreciate it. Melinda's been doing that for a long time, and we need to support her and other people that are involved in doing this too. Hi, Sam.
Oh, yeah, g'day, guys. I want to congratulate you both for bringing this issue up, because I'm actually surprised that actually someone's taken the time to consider the effect that pornography is having on our community, and I think it's towards the young people and the old people. I'm a father of four kids, and my oldest daughter is 11, youngest is 5, and they're all girls, that is. And I personally am challenged with the situation at the moment where, I'm getting harassed to get the internet into the house. And I am refusing to get the internet into the house because of the intimidation that I have of my daughters being exposed to pornography. I don't want to sound like a sourpuss or anything like that. I know at some stage they're all going to just see it and know all about it, but, not many young kids can control what to do with these type of images that are just, and we're not just talking about naked ladies or naked boys, we're talking about aggressive images on internet. So
you're making that stand to not bring in the internet, even though I guess you're going to be going against certainly your daughter's wishes as they get older.
Well, I'm trying to play a bit of a mind game of showing them that I am their mate and not their enemy, and just making them give me the reason that they need the internet while they need some information that, okay, well, the library's got the net at the moment. Because I feel that, I did muck around with the internet, and I have to admit I did throw in words to see how easy it is for me to venture into these arenas. And the opportunities that I had and the sites that I were able to see, I thought, nah.
Yeah.
I think that the community as a whole is negligent that we allow the governments to allow pornography on the internet that readily available, not only to young people, but I think to older people, which is destroying relationships and kids alone. That I think, once upon a time you couldn't even, like the lady said, you had to go right to the back of the shop where it was all plastered up and you needed a pass to get in there to see it. I think all labelled churches throughout the whole of the community should be standing up, letting the government know that they have to basically ban all pornography on the net. That's the point.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Sam.
Thank you.
And thanks for sharing the stand that you're actually making. Melinda Tankard-Rees is with us. I want to throw a couple more questions to Melinda before we wrap this up. And one of those is how we can actually help kids who have already experienced porn, seen it somewhere, to actually decode those messages so they're not affected by it so bad, because unfortunately so many of them have actually already seen it. And also want to talk about the actual cost that Melinda herself has actually paid for standing up about this too. Melinda, we've already talked about the fact that so many young people, boys and girls included, will have actually seen pornography by the time that they're 15. It'll even start earlier. We've even had calls of people tonight who've actually said that, it was 10 years old. What can parents do if their kids already come across that? And what do you think is a way that particularly the girls, the boys as well, but particularly the girls, can actually be helped to decode what they're seeing so that the destructive elements of what they've already started to see will be halted?
It's really, really hard to halt it because, I've looked at stuff. I looked at quite a lot of stuff because I want to speak from an authentic position. And the material that I've looked at, you are looking at crime scenes evidence. You're looking at material which incites crimes of violence against women and girls. What we need to do is to stop using the terms free speech or civil libertarians. I call these people sexual assault libertarians because they are justifying the most vile and gross acts imaginable against women and girls, and I probably can't describe them on this particular show. I've possibly already tested the boundaries a little bit. But it is very hard to discuss this stuff if your kids come across it because it is... it is so toxic and so bad. Even when you try to do everything you can in terms of filtering, and this is why we need filtering at the source, because it is not enough for us to put our own filters in place. We need the ISP providers to say, okay, we're not going to be a channel for material which incites crimes of violence against women and girls. One site I just came across recently, which I won't give the name of, it's just too vile, but it encourages boys to get their girlfriends or one-night stands or whoever drunk or drugged, and then to sexually assault them and to send in their photographs and their films of the sexual assault. So this whole site is a sexual assault pro-rape site. And yet the people that don't want any filtering on the internet use arguments like, let a thousand flowers bloom. You know, we ain't talking about flowers here. We're talking about, you know, noxious weeds, really. So it is extremely hard to have those conversations with your children because the material is so graphic. You know, how do you talk about torture and bondage sites with your daughters? You know, and this is the stuff they can stumble across. I mean, what a lot of good parents don't realise is that there are thousands upon thousands of websites based on children's cartoon characters. Kim Possible has hundreds and hundreds of porn sites devoted to her. She's a very popular cartoon character for girls, an action figure. She goes out and does amazing things in the world. Multiple numbers. Kim Possible Porn, Kim Possible XXX. Same with Dora the Explorer and Atomic Betty and others. So it is impossible for your kids not to come across something. The pornographers are so clever. They know how to use terms and words that if a kid searches for something innocent, they'll end up in a porn site. Often they frequent kids' cartoon sites, and often if it's happened to you, it's happened to me, where a pop-up ad will come on and the kid can't get out of it. It just lodges itself there on the screen, and it's very hard to get out of it. So I just think it's actually, I find it hard to give parents advice because it is too hard for us on our own, again, apart from the general sensible things you do, like having the computer in the public space, and that, or not having the computer, which, as one of your callers has chosen to do, no internet at least. So, look, I can't give an easy answer on it because we need help to do a good job as parents, and we're just not getting it.
You've been talking about cartoon characters that are kind of co-opted into this on a softer level, but like you said before, it's you know, you don't want to use the word regular. High Five children's presenter Kelly was posing for a men's magazine in lingerie recently, and you stood up and made a public comment about that. Can you just describe the kind of backlash you got in your email box?
Look, if anyone wants to see it, they can read my book. I start my introduction to the book called The Pornification of Girlhood with some of the emails I received, and I must say that they were the ones I could publish. Look, any of us involved in this issue gets abusive email. You know, some of the lighter things I've been called, you know, fun police, the Taliban, that I want to put women in head-to-toe burqas, that I'm involved in fueling a moral panic. And look, most of the emails I get just tell me, you know, how ugly I am, and give me advice on what I need to do to address that. But listen, to be honest with you, that stuff doesn't look. I'm kind of used to that. And anyone, look, I've got friends that have had death threats. I've got friends overseas fighting these issues who have to regularly change addresses, who have police protection. So, and other colleagues of mine who have entire porn sites set up using their photos, their images. So this is just, this is a price that you pay. But what causes me the most despair and disturbance is just how women-hating this stuff is and how many people will justify it, justify women-hating, justify the incitement of crimes of violence against women, and even people that should know better, really. Make out that I'm exaggerating. I'm not exaggerating. I've described the problem. I haven't got as graphic as I could get because of the nature of your show.
Well, I remember.
It's the harm that's being done to women that disturbs me and distresses me more than anything that's said to me.
Yeah, I remember when Clive Hamilton and the Australia Institute released their paper on pornography and the effects that has. Clive Hamilton, you couldn't say that he's a right wing, but he's very, very, very left wing, and yet he really got a hammering from the media even the left-wing media about that and whether he was a stooge for John Howard, etc. It seems anybody who makes a stand against this is going to be a sitting duck when it comes to abuse. Now, what can we do to support you?
Oh, there's a nice question. Gosh. Well, look, if people want to support me, they can certainly buy the book and get equipped, get across the issue. The strength of this book is that it brings together diverse voices from every political persuasion, people of faith, people not of faith, who all come to the same conclusion about the pornification of culture and its impact on children especially. That's the strength of this book. You know, Clive Hamilton's in there, Dr. Emma Rush, who wrote the Corporate Pedophilia Report for the Australia Institute, Dr. Louise Newman, who's a psychologist working at the ground floor with girls. I've also got Steve Bidoff from Tasmania, who's written a profound piece about the trashing of girlhood. Noni Hazelhurst, the actress, has written the introduction, has written the preface. So a lot of good content there. Graphic, you know, again, just to warn people so they don't say they were surprised, confronting. But it's all material that's mainstream. It's all mainstream stuff that I've collected and put into this book. So they can support the book. They can get involved in campaigns. They can support groups like Kids Free to Be Kids. They can join in campaigns like Frost Off when I get that up and running, and another campaign I'm wanting to start called Collective Shout, which will, someone described my book as a collective shout against the sexualisation of girls. So I want to turn that into a movement which equips people, shows them how to complain, who to go to, you know, the real specifics about how to do it. So yeah, look, there's a whole lot of areas really, but people can complain themselves. You know, there's a saying I love called the standard you walk past is the standard you set. If individuals don't get involved in making complaints, they are saying, well, that standard's actually okay for my kids, it's okay for my grandkids, it's okay for my nieces and nephews. So everybody, I believe, has a duty to stand up against this and to do something about it. Lily Tomlin, the actress, once said, I always wish someone would do something about that, and then I realised I was someone. So if all the listeners could realise they are someone, they have a duty to complain, you know, maybe we could see a shift. I believe there is a strong desire for change, but we just need to action that in a in a really effective way.
Okay, Melinda. Well, I hope that a whole bunch of us will also take you on as a prayer person as well. We actually bring to pray for your work and pray for you in particular with all the abuse that you get for the amazing work you're doing. Thanks for joining us again. Really appreciate it.
I always appreciate your support. Thank you so much.
Melinda Tankard-Reist, the book Getting Real, Challenging the Sexualization of Girls.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.